All right, physical examination. The first part is inspect with your eyes. So, respiratory rate. We've already learned how to do that. What do? We watch their breathing for how long? 30 seconds and then multiply by 2. What is the most important aspect of doing that? Don't tell them that that's what you're doing because they will breathe differently. We can look at the thoracic cage itself, the shape, and what we call the anterior-posterior diameter, or AP diameter. Now, am I thicker this way in the chest, not the stomach, in the chest? Am I thicker this way or this way? Am I thicker this way or this way? Okay, this way is thicker. Why is that? Imagine for a moment that I wanted to take a deep breath. What just happened to the shape of my chest? It expanded. Which direction? Front to back. So our bodies are designed to be thinner front to back so that when we take a breath, they can expand. Now, there are some people whose lungs are already hyperinflated, and they're like this all the time. We call that barrel-chested. So a barrel-chested person is going to have a thicker anterior-posterior diameter. Generally speaking, you compare it front to back to the side, and we call it a ratio of 1 to 2. You should be approximately twice as thick sideways as you are frontwards. Next thing is look at their neck muscles. If they've got nice, big sternocleidomastoid muscles, that could be because they are using them. When you use a muscle, it gets bigger. So if a person is using their accessory muscles a lot, they may have nice, big, prominent neck muscles. Next thing is posture and position. Now, imagine for a moment that you have just run across campus because you were late for this class and you wanted to take your quiz on time, and you got here, and what did you do as you're beginning to catch your breath? You put your arms down on your knees, put your hands on your knees. Why is that? Why is it easier to breathe like this? Why is it easier to breathe like this? I mean, didn't your coach say, don't do that, do this? He's wrong.
Really?
Yes. Well, actually, they both accomplish the same thing. What this does is it takes the weight of your thorax off of your chest, so it helps you to breathe easier. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't let you go up and down with your chest cavity. This, what we're doing is we're pushing our chestwards upwards. We're pushing the shoulder girdle upwards, which makes it easier to breathe because you don't have to fight gravity anymore. So right here, gravity's pulling my shoulders down. I've got to use muscle to take a breath in. When you tripod, when you push down or you lean on the table, or sometimes they'll do like this a lot, what happens is it pushes that chest girdle upwards, making it easier for them to breathe. So they're actually resting their neck muscles in this case. That's called tripoding. So people who tripod, do you think they're having more or fewer problems breathing? More problems. You can look at their skin and nails. What will nails look like with people who have had long-term breathing problems? Clubbing. And skin, depending on the condition, they may look pink or reddish, or they may look bluish or pale. Now, why would a person look reddish or pink if they've got trouble breathing? Nope, it's not effort. What is it that makes a person's skin look pink or red? Blood. Now, what is the purpose of blood in terms of breathing?
Oxygen.
To get oxygen to your tissue. Now, let's imagine that you've had trouble breathing for a long time. But better yet, let's imagine you go from here to Colorado. Anyone here ever live in the mountains? Okay. Now, in the mountains, what happens to your blood? There's less oxygen up there. How does your body respond to that? By getting lightheaded. So it increases the number of red blood cells. It increases the amount of hemoglobin. Why? To compensate. So sometimes people who've had long history of respiratory disease, their body will compensate by producing more red blood cells. That's going to make a person look pinker or paler? Pinker. So we call that plethora. P-L-E-T-H-O-R-A. So plethora is when a person has excess red blood cells to compensate for respiratory disease. It makes them appear red or ruddy. Now, on the other hand, they might turn pale. What would make them turn pale? If you're not getting enough oxygen into the blood, how does your body respond to that? It's going to shunt blood away from non-essentials like skin. What's the process for that? Starts with an E. Epinephrine. So you're going to get sympathetic nervous system response, which is going to release epinephrine, which is going to cause vasoconstriction of the skin. So a person might appear pale or gray. The other thing that can happen if a person has respiratory problems, if they have so much respiratory problems that they actually start desaturating hemoglobin. Now, what color is blood that has lots of oxygen in it? Bright red. What's the color of oxygen of blood that has a little bit of oxygen in it? Kind of darker red. And if it has very little oxygen in it, it actually begins to turn bluish, at least through our skin. So a person who is desaturating in terms of hemoglobin will eventually turn blue, appear blue, or what's the other term for it? Cyanotic. So it looks, well, cyanosis is the condition, cyanotic is the appearance. And we said that happens with little kids when they get cold, usually on their lips first and fingernails. But in a person who's got respiratory disease, it can actually happen all over their body. Now, that's a late sign. By the time someone gets to cyanosis, they're in big trouble. And then we have something we call level of consciousness. How's that, how is that abbreviated? LOC. Now, again, remember the confusing abbreviations department? LOC is sometimes used in the emergency room to mean loss of consciousness. But the correct abbreviation for LOC means level of consciousness. Now, what does level of consciousness have to do with oxygen levels? Okay, your brain runs on oxygen. And what happens, and now, most of your organs can run on either fat or glucose. Your brain is almost entirely and exclusively runs on glucose, which means it has to have oxygen. If it does not have oxygen, it is going to get very loopy very quickly. Now, I used to go to the Air Force Academy a long time ago in a past life. And because you're supposed to become a pilot, one of the things they do is they put you through what they call physiological training, which really means they want to put you in an altitude chamber. So what they do is they take you up to the equivalent of 25 or 35,000 feet level of oxygen and let you experience hypoxia. So what they want you to do is have an understanding of this is what it's like if you lose pressure when you're up at altitude, and so you have to fix the problem very quickly because what happens is you can, your ability to think completely shuts down. They didn't show... Yeah. So it's not like that. It's not how it happens.
Oh.
You know, but yeah, that's what they're trying to show you there. So what happens in this case, you know, they put you in the room, they take you up, and they ask you a series of questions, like a couple math questions, like really simple stuff, what's 2 plus 2? And they ask you a couple other questions, write down your favorite color, and you have no ability to think whatsoever. So that's with hypoxia. When a person does not get enough oxygen to their brain, they become loopy and weird, and they'll actually just drift off to sleep, but never wake up. Now, why is that important, you ask? Go ahead, ask. It's very important because what's the drive to breathe? What creates the drive to breathe? pH level, mediated by what gas? Carbon dioxide. But in people with COPD, they often have elevated CO2 levels. So after a while, the body stops paying attention. So then we rely on oxygen levels. So in order for that person to breathe, they need to have low oxygen levels. Now, they come into the hospital because they've been having extra trouble breathing. And, you know, young nurse Alvarez says, I know what I'm going to do to help this patient breathe better. I'm going to put them on more oxygen. What did he just do to that patient? Well, he made more oxygen in their blood, right? But what did that do to their breathing now? It stops it. Because remember, they were relying on what to tell them to take a deep breath or to take another breath? They were relying on low oxygen levels. So if you artificially increase oxygen by giving them too much oxygen, you'll actually make them stop breathing. Now, if Nurse Alvarez is observant, he will notice that the patient stops breathing, passes out, and he will call a code. They'll bring the patient back to life, and he'll be embarrassed. This will happen to every one of you if you work in the hospital about a year. Now, if Nurse Alvarez is unobservant, he will turn up the oxygen level and leave the room. And then when he comes back 30 minutes later, the patient will be dead. And now he calls a code, but it's too late. We can't bring the patient back. So the important thing for us to remember is that in a patient who's got CO2 or elevated CO2 levels, you know, consistently high CO2 levels, and is relying on hypoxemia for their drive to breathe, if we give them too much oxygen, they'll drift off to sleep and never wake up. Well, what you have to do is you have to keep them always a little bit low. Now, that's the tricky part, though, because what happens if they're normally running around 89% or 90% oxygen, and suddenly they start dropping, and now they're 85%, what do? Give them more oxygen. But then as you give them more oxygen, it starts coming back up. Now they shoot over. Now they're no longer 90. Now they're up to 95. Now guess what they do? Stop breathing. So it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't, but err on the side of keeping the patient alive. So the key thing is when you've got that kind of patient, you may have to give them oxygen, but you're going to know that they're going to stop breathing eventually, and then you're going to look embarrassed, but it's better to do that than to come back later and just have them die.
Can they break that cycle?
You can, but it's difficult because, it's like, have you ever driven a rear-wheel drive in the snow? Once you start fishtailing, you're like, you overcorrect one way, then overcorrect the other way. It's hard just kind of get back straight. So it can be done, but it's a little bit more difficult.
So the only thing you really do is like just keep monitoring it and noting the level, whether it's going lower or higher, and adjust accordingly.
Right. Yeah. Basically, you just have to try and titrate is the word, carefully. You know, the amount of oxygen to the amount of oxygen in their blood. All right, but level of consciousness is a good indicator of oxygen status. And there's actually a dementia. What did we say a dementia was? It's cognitive impairment, which means inability to think properly, characterized by memory loss and one of four other things. So there's actually a form of dementia that's caused by lack of blood flow to the brain. We call it ischemic dementia. used to be the number one cause of dementia back when strokes were a lot more common. Now that we're very good at treating strokes, it's not as common as it used to be. All right, physical examination of respiratory. So we did the inspection. Whew, aren't you glad? Done with that. So recap. Respiratory rate, thoracic cage, including accessory muscles, skin and nails, level of consciousness.